Side 2, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 42. Dottie yawned.
You're right, of course. My beauty sleep.
When the fire had burned to white embers, Ruff checked that Dottie was sound asleep. He shook the badger gently, cautioning him to silence.
Listen, Brock, we could have sailed further today, but I chose to berth in this spot because I feel there'll be trouble further downstream. No sense in upsetting young pretty features there. Look, I've got a plan. Here's what we'll do. I'll wake you at the crack of dawn, and the pair of us'll rise nice and quiet. Then...
When Ruff had outlined his scheme, Lord Brocktree nodded agreement. Then he lay down again and stared at the canopy of stars twinkling through the trees, his paw clasping the battle blade at the ready, noting every noise of flora or fauna in the forest night. 7. The night that fell over the three companions on the stream bank also lowered its shades over Salamandastron and the western shores. Silently, with furled sails, ships drifted in on the flood tide. Out of the thinning mists they slid, headed for the shore on the quiet swell. Ships upon ships upon ships, craft of every description, from single to foremasted, flat-bottomed, deep-keeled, bulky and sleek, large and small. Any creature could have walked the length of the sea, a league from north to south, by stepping from ship to ship without once wetting a paw. Then came the blue hordes of Ungat Trun from north and south, marching along the shores, the sounds of their footpaws muffled in the soft sands, in columns 50 deep and 50 long, following their commanders. No war drums were seen, nor trumpets, nor any other instrument, flute, cymbal, or horn, to aid the marching. Starlight glinted dully off armor, spear tip, blade, and arrowhead as they came, closing in on Salamandastron like the jaws of a giant pincer. Inscrutable masses, perfectly drilled, the ultimate machine of destruction. Flanked by 20 soldiers, Ungat Trun strode up to the rocky fortress, his only illumination a torch held in the paws of Grottel. The wildcat's keen eyes flicked up to the long, open rectangle of Stonepaw's room. There stood the badger lord of Salamandastron, clad in war armor, holding an enormous javelin.
"So, you are still here, strike dog?"
Ungat Trun called up in his savage, guttural growl. The reply was immediate.
"Aye, to the death, strike cat."
The wildcat's fangs showed in a sneer of derision.
"So be it. 'Twill be your death, not mine."
"Big words,"
Stonepaw retorted mockingly.
"I've already heard big words from the bad-mannered scum you sent here earlier today. They mean naught to me, the ravings of fools and idiots. Your messenger said you would make the stars fall from the sky. Look up, braggart. They are still there, and always will be."
The badger's words stung the wildcat. His voice quivered with rage as he detected the laughter of hares all around.
"I have no more words for you, strike dog. Tell them, Fregorl."
Like a ghost, the hooded figure materialized out of the night.
"These are the days of Ungat Trun, the fearsome beast. Know you that he always speaks truth. If he says the stars will fall from the sky, then even they must obey. Look!"
Grottel flung a pawful of powder on his palely burning torch. With a whoosh, it shot up a bolt of brilliant blue flame. This was the signal. Every beast of the horde on shore and every creature crowding the decks of the hovering ships immediately lighted, each one a torch they carried specially for the purpose. In the awesome scene that was revealed, land and sea, as far as the eye could gaze, was a blaze. Stiffener Medic peered up at the sky. Because of the intensity of light below, not a single star could be seen, just a wide, black void.
Any creature on the reaches of Salamandastron's heights could look out and see countless myriad lights ranging out to the horizon. At another signal from Grottle, the 20 guards nearest the mountain roared out aloud, "Mighty Ungatron has made the stars fall from the sky!" Every hair on the mountain was stunned with shock. The seas and the whole shore were ablaze with light. It was like having day below and night above, the stars made invisible in the sky due to the powerful lights radiating upward. Grottle held a whispered conference with Ungat, and the Wildcat nodded before speaking out. His voice echoed off the mountain in the awe-struck silence.
"I see you have no scornful comments to make, Stripe Dog. You have witnessed the power of Ungat Trun. My blue hordes will camp here on your doorstep. When dawn comes, you will feel the earth shake. You have left it too late to retreat from the mountain, as I commanded you to do. Now, you must reap the penalty."
Then, turning his back on Lord Stonepaw, the Wildcat marched off back to his ship. The Badger Lord watched as the torches turned into campfires. Bramwell, the oldest hare on the mountain, came shakily forward to clutch the badger's paw, his voice trembling like a reed in the wind.
"Lord, I would not have believed it had I not seen it with these old eyes. What can we do against one who is truly magic?"
Stonepaw patted Bramwell's stooped back gently.
"That was no magic, my friend. It was only a very clever trick, an illusion. But the reality of all those lights is a fearful thing, for it shows the extent of Trun's army. Troby, your eyes are still useful. Could you have counted the number of torches out there?"
Troby shook his head vigorously.
"You must be jesting, sir. No beast alive could do that."
Stiffener's comment confirmed Stonepaw's worst fears.
"Aye, and every one of those torches was held by a vermin soldier. 'Tis hard to imagine such an army."
Stonepaw stared out at the campfires burning holes into the night, both near and far.
"No doubt you all heard what the Wildcat had to say. We've left it too late to retreat."
Silently, the hares pondered the enormity of what their lord had said. But the feeling of doom was broken when Stiffener Medic spoke out boldly.
"So, what do we do? Stand around here waiting to be conquered and slain? Not this hare, no sir. Chin in, chest out, stiffen the old lip and stand firm. Maybe that scum can make stars fall and earth tremble, but let's see him crack a mountain with us to defend it."
Lord Stonepaw's eyes lit up with a flame of battle.
"Stiffener, gather my hares at every ledge and window. Let's show the vermin what we think of them."
Ungat Trun came hurrying from his stateroom cabin as defiant roaring from Salamandastron ripped through the night stillness.
"Eulalia! Eulalia! Eulalia!"
Grottle hobbled behind his master and spat contemptuously into the sea.
"Fools! Do they think they can scare us with their battle cries?"
Ungat Trun did not even deign to look at the shrunken fox.
"No, they don't mean to scare us, but they're letting us know that they aren't scared either. That's called courage, Grottle, but you wouldn't understand it. If those hares were enough in number to match us 1-1, then I'd be scared."
Dawn arrived, pale washed, though in less than an hour it had blossomed into a beautiful late spring day, showing the promise of a good summer. Lord Stonepaw had witnessed the day's arrival. He had scarcely slept throughout the night. Now, sitting on the edge of his bed in a warm shaft of sunlight, he fell into a doze. Blench, the cook, shook him gently.
"Wake up, sire. Those villains are waiting to see you outside on the shore. I brought you a bite of breakfast."
Stonepaw opened his eyes slowly and winced.
"Oh,
Don't ever fall asleep wearing armor, Blench. It feels like waking up in a cooking pot. I suppose that wildcat villain is showing off his army at our gates.
Blench placed the tray of food at his side.
Aye, there's all manner of blue-dyed vermin parading up and down on the beach, in full fig, too.
Mercy me, they're a strange lot. Do you think they're about to start the war?
The Badger Lord chose a warm, damson muffin and poured himself a beaker of dandelion and rosehip tea.
More than likely, Blench, more than likely. I feel peckish this morning. Let them wait until I've broken my fast. Did you bring any honey?
Right there under your muzzle, Lord.
Stonepaw spread honey on his muffin.
You run along now, Marm, and see that my hares get fed.
As she withdrew, Blench chuckled.
Fat chance of any salamandestron hare going into battle on an empty belly. Did you ever hear of such a thing?
Ungat Trun stood on a rock, Grottle and his Grand Fregorl alongside him, and looked around the western shores. Nodding his satisfaction, he turned to the fox and the ferret.
Can you see the sand?
Fregorl shook her hooded head.
No, mightiness, only the blue hordes. They are in such great numbers that no beast could see the sand they stand upon. They are even shoulder to shoulder in the shallows.
Ungat fixed his stern eye upon the shrunken fox.
Another trick you've missed, eh, Grottle?
The magician cringed as he shook his head in bewilderment.
Sire?
Ungat Trun's paw swept across, indicating the scene.
Not only can I make the stars fall, but I can also cause the land to disappear. Use your head, stupid!
Thinking to divert his master's wrath, Grottle pointed to the mountain.
But the striped dog shows his insolence by not bothering to appear and witness your power, O exalted one!
That is a mere ploy which the commanders of armies use upon one another,
Ungat Trun replied scornfully.
He thinks to fray my temper by keeping me waiting. Have you no brains at all? I should have slain you with the rest of your family, eh, Grottle?
Lowering his head, the fox mumbled humbly,
I thank you for sparing my life every day since, sire.
Ungat smiled dispassionately at the fox's bowed head.
I think I must have damaged your brain when I crippled your back. Ha! There's the striped dog at his window.
Turning his attention to the mountain, the wildcat did not see the hate-laden glance which Grottle shot at him. Lord Stonepaw and a dozen archers looked down from the window, showing no surprise at the masses of vermin crowding the shores.
A fine day to die, eh, striped dog?
Ungat Trun called. The badger smiled down in a patronizing way.
So soon, cat? I thought you were going to make the earth tremble. Could you not spare us long enough to see your next trick?
At a nod from Ungat, the Fregorl held a red banner high and announced aloud,
Let the enemies of Ungat Trun feel the earth tremble.
The entire army began to jump up and down in perfect unison, chanting as they did,
Ungat Trun! Ungat Trun! Ungat Trun!
As Fregorl waved her banner, they increased their speed, jumping in the air and landing hard on the sand, their chant becoming a roar, the noise of countless footpaws stamping down becoming greater. Water splashed high on the tide line, and clouds of sand began rising as they continued their relentless pounding. Though he could scarcely be heard above the din, the hare named Bungworthy funneled both paws around his mouth and shouted at Stonepaw,
Look, Lord! The earth is shaking! See? Great ripples are spreading seaward! The shore is shaking where they jump. Great seasons, the earth is shaking. It's shaking.
As suddenly as it had started, the demonstration stopped. Ungat Trun stood smiling grimly up at Stonepaw as the sand cloud settled and the ripples receded.
"Well, Striped Dog, did you feel the earth shake? Did I not speak truly? Throw down your arms and come out!"
Ungat climbed down from his rock perch and stood at the head of his army, confident he had made his point. Lord Stonepaw merely grunted.
"Ha! You might have felt the earth tremble, cat, but Salamandastron remained rock firm. We didn't feel a thing. Now let me show you something."
Stonepaw hurled his big war javelin right at his foe. The ranks closed around the wildcat. A rat, transfixed, fell dead, another behind him sorely wounded. No matter how fearsome the foe, or how great their numbers, when it came to fighting, badger lords were renowned. Old as he was, the present ruler was no exception. Lord Stonepaw of Salamandastron had begun the war. Fleet's Cut was close to total exhaustion. The old hare had not stopped since he left the mountain. Ranging east, to begin with, then sweeping back west in a great arc, he searched hills, flatlands, valleys, and clifftops, finally arriving back on the shores somewhere north of Salamandastron. Slumping down on the beach, he waited until his breathing calmed a bit before unslinging a small pack and drinking some cold mint tea. Like an angry wasp, a barbed arrow buzzed by the hare, nicking his ear and burying itself in the sand. A small patrol, 10 rats, from the great blue hordes emerged from the dunes behind Fleet's Cut.
"Stop there! Move and you die!"
their officer shouted. With blood trickling from his ear onto his jaw, Fleet's Cut took off as only a hare can, galvanized back to his former self as he sought to lose his pursuers. But the rats were hard on his paws as he led them on a twisting course around the shore and back into the dunes. With his footpaws sinking deep into the soft sand hills, Fleet's Cut panted raggedly, strong sunlight beating down on him as he breasted one dune and rolled down it to face another. He wished with all his heart that he were many seasons younger. He could have drawn circles around the rat patrol when he was a leveret. Every so often, arrows zipped into the sand alongside him. Once a spear almost pierced his footpaw. Fleet's Cut kept going. He knew that a moving target was the hardest to hit. Now, as he turned inland, the dunes gave way to hummocks and hillocks coated with sharp, long-bladed grass. He tripped over a blackberry creeper, leaping up as best he could, ignoring the scratches the thorns had inflicted on him. But he could hear the labored breathing of the 10 rats getting closer.
"Fan out and circle him! Lame him if you can!" their leader rasped out.
Straining as though his lungs would burst, Fleet's Cut managed an extra turn of speed, dashing headlong to outdistance the flanking maneuver. A small grove of pines appeared up ahead, seeming to offer a hiding place. But one rat, faster than the rest, detached himself from the flankers and went directly after the hare. No matter how hard he ran, Fleet's Cut could not prevent the rat closing up on him. Now he was not more than 10 paces behind. Chancing a backward glance, Fleet's Cut saw the rat preparing his spear for a throw. Then his footpaws hit thick beds of pine needles as he dived headlong into the grove, the spear thudding into a pine trunk a fraction to his side. Next moment, there was the sound of a meaty thud. The rat fell pole-axed, his scream cut short by a slingshot.
"Up with thy paws, old 'un, quick!"
Without thinking, Fleet's Cut rolled over and threw up his paws. A thick, woven net enveloped him, and he grabbed tight as he was swung off his back into the branches above. A big, rough-looking female squirrel with a loaded sling dangling from one paw winked at him.
"Don't thee say a word now, Long Ears! Be still!"
Sighting the rats entering the fir grove, she glared fiercely about her at 40-odd squirrels, similarly armed, concealed in the upper branches.
"Take no prisoners. To the dark forest with them all." Whack, thwack, thock, thud.
In less time than it took to draw breath, the rat column was slain to a beast.
strewn about the bottom of the pines, some of them with their eyes still wide open in surprise. Leaving Fleetscott still caught up in the net, the squirrel and her band leapt down onto the corpses, stripping every scrap of armor and every weapon from them. Squabbles broke out over the ownership of possessions, and there was much tooth-bearing.
"I sighted yon sword first. Give it here." "Nah, 'tis mine, not thine. I slew the long tail."
The big female squirrel was among them like a whirlwind, sending argumentative ones winded to the earth as she clubbed their stomachs savagely with her loaded sling.
"I say, who gets what? Up on thy paws, Battle, or I'll give you more'n just a love tap next time."
One young male muttered something, and she laid him flat with a tremendous smack.
"Thee've been told about using language like that, Grood? Can you not see we've got company? Behave now, all of ye!"
Fleetscott strove to disentangle himself from the net.
"Stop me! Any bloomin' chance of getting out of this, you chaps? Lend a paw here," he called down.
The female squirrel and two equally big males bounded up and lowered the net expertly to the earth, where the others soon had Fleetscott free. Somersaulting neatly out of the tree, the big female landed lightly on her footpaws. Fleetscott bowed gravely to her.
"Thanks for saving my life, marm."
She examined a dead rat's bow and arrows.
"'Twasn't to save thy life, we dropped 'em. Weapons and plunder, that's why we slew the long tails. I'm called Juka, the Sling, and these are my tribe. Be you from the mountain south of here?"
The hare nodded.
"Aye, my name's Fleetscott."
Juka sat, her tail brush against a pine trunk.
"You've got big trouble over there, Fleetscott. We've been watching blue vermin marching down coast for days, all headed for thy mountain."
Fleetscott crouched down facing her.
"That's only a third of 'em, Juka Marm. There's as many must have come up from the south and another horde from the sea. Great fleet of the blighters."
Juka watched her band dragging the rats off for burial.
"Old Badger'll have his paws full. They'll massacre him. Hares on yon mount be as old as thee. My young'uns are long gone from there."
Fleetscott was mildly surprised at Juka's intelligence.
"You seem to know rather a lot about Salamandastron."
The squirrel wound her sling around her tail tip.
"'Tis my business to know what goes on hither and yon. Only a fool would live a lifetime in these parts and know naught of them. Did ye escape the mountain, Fleetscott?"
The old hare shook his head sadly.
"No, I was sent out by Lord Stonepaw to scout up reinforcements. But there ain't a bally hare around here any more. Don't suppose you'd fancy helping us out, marm?"
Juka tossed a sling stone deftly from one paw to the other.
"Nay, not I, nor my tribe, even though I pity thy plight, friend. Other creatures' troubles are their own, not ours. But that doesn't mean we don't show hospitality to guests. Thee must be weary and hungered, too. Come rest a while and sup with us. Thou art too tired to go further, friend."
Fleetscott heaved a sigh as he rose stiffly.
"Sorry, marm, but I have to travel on, what? Can't let the jolly old side down by taking time off."
He accepted Juka's paw, and she smiled wryly at him. "Fare thee well, olden. Fortune attend thy search."
"Aye, and good luck to you, Juka the Sling. Let me know if you change your mind. You've got a perilous tribe there, good warriors all."
Juka watched Fleetscott lope off through the pine grove.
"Huh. Brave and foolish, like all hares. What say you, Grood?"
The young squirrel muttered half to himself, half to Juka. She whacked him soundly across both ears.
"He'd been told about that language. I'll scrub thy mouth out with sand and ramsons, if there be any more of it."
8. At the inlet camp, dawn was already well advanced, and dewdrops glistened on the blossoms of hemlock, marshwort, and angelica. From upstream, the constant call of a cuckoo roused Dottie from sleep. She lay there for a moment, expecting her nostrils to be assailed by the odors of wood smoke and cooking. However, the hair maid was disappointed. Apart from the monotonous cuckoo noise, the little camp was quiet and ominously still.
Rising cautiously, she checked around. The elm tree trunk lay moored in the shallows, but of her two friends, there was no sign. Taking care not to raise her voice too much, Dottie hailed her companions.
I say, Rock Trees, Roth, are you there?
A rustle from some bushes caused her to turn, smiling.
Come on out, you chaps. I know you. Yeek!
As she leaned into the shrubbery, a big blackbird burst from it, the bird's wings striking her face as it flew off. Dottie decided then to be stern with her fellow travelers.
Now see here, you two. A joke's a joke and all that, but I've had about enough. Show yourselves front and center, please, right now.
But the only answer she received was the cuckoo calling, Cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. Dottie flung a twig irately in its direction.
Oh, shut your blistering beak, you bally nuisance!
She decided that Brocktree and Ruff had gone out foraging for breakfast. Muttering darkly to herself, the hairmaid sat on the bank, munching a stale barley scone and an apple she had dug from her bag. The warming sunlight did nothing to raise her spirits. She felt deserted and alone.
Huh. Rotten old Brocko and Slyboots Ruff, sneaking off just 'cause a gal's got to have her beauty sleep. What? Bet they've found a patch of juicy berries or something, probably sitting there stuffing their great fat faces.
She pictured the otter and the badger doing just that and began imitating their voices in conversation.
Har! Step me rudder and swoggle me barnacles. Matey, these berries is prime vittles. Shall we save some and take 'em back to camp for the young'un?
Ha! Don't talk silly, Ruff. Let the lazy whippersnapper find her own berries. That's the trouble with young'uns these days. Want everything done for 'em.
She was working herself up into a fine old temper when she noticed something on the flat top of the elm boat. It was a crude sketch done with a piece of burnt wood from last night's fire. There was an arrow pointing downstream and a depiction of herself sitting on the boat. By a sharp bend in the stream, Ruff and Brocktree were drawn, apparently waiting for her. Also, there was some sketchy writing, obviously Ruff's. See you at noon. The hairmaid studied it, still chuntering to herself.
See me at noon where the stream bends, eh? Well, how flippin' nice to let a body know, blinkin' deserters. Cha! Is that supposed to be a picture of me? Just look at those miserable ears. Mine are a jolly sight prettier than that, what? Humph! No wonder that otter's folks chucked him out. His spellin's dreadful.
She found the burnt stick and corrected it all to her satisfaction, drawing a huge stomach on Ruff and an ugly, drooping snout on the badger lord. Finally, after adding many touches to make the likeness of herself more beautiful, Dottie gave Ruff a black mark for his spelling. Feeling much better, she tossed the charcoal away.
Righto, young hare-mcgow! Time you commanded your own vessel, what?
After one or two minor setbacks, Dottie found the going fairly simple. The stream was straight and smooth enough, and she soon got the knack of keeping the log in midstream and sailing on course. The hairmaid never tired of holding conversations with herself, for who better was there to talk with, she reasoned.
I say, I've just thought of a wheeze. I'll paddle right past those two, leave 'em on the blinkin' bank.
What ho!
I'll shout to them, keep the jolly old paws poundin'. The exercise will do you the world of good, chaps. Put yourselves about a bit. That's the ticket. Find lots of super grub, and I may consider letting you back aboard. Bye-bye now.
She giggled aloud at the picture she conjured up and continued her conversation.
Yes, I think I'd make a good captain, or a captainess, maybe. Wish I could play my hair accordion a while. Pity I've got to keep hold of this confounded paddle. Never mind. I'll just have to sing unaccompanied. Think I'll compose one of those shanty-type things, like these watery types are always caterwauling as they sail along. Here goes.
She broke out into a ditty which caused nearby birds to abandon their nests, chicks and all.
Wompin' along with a waffle-de-ho, as down the stream I jolly well go, shoutin', lower your rudder and furl that log. There's nothin' on land like a sea-goin' frog. So oar that paddle and paddle that oar. Listen me, hearties, I'll sing ye some more. I'm a beautiful hare what lives on the river,
In winter, I sweat, and in summer, I shiver. I don't need no badger or otter for crew. I'm cook, and I'm paddler, and captainess, too. So mainsail me, gizzards, until we reach shore. Listen me, hearties, I'll sing you some more. You don't mess with Dotty, that old river beast. I'm grizzled and fearsome, and that ain't the least. So swoggle me, scuppers, 10 dozen I've slew. I'm a jolly young creature, and quite pretty, too. So mizzen me muzzle and mop the boat's floor. I'm sorry, me hearties, I don't know no more. Beg pardon about the grammar, of course, she commented to a water beetle swimming alongside. Dreadful terms us nautical types use, you know. I'll work on it, I promise, what? Let's see. Strangle me binnacle? No, that doesn't sound right. How about boggle me bowsprit? Rather, that sounds much better.
Away down the stream, Dotty paddled, composing more horrible lyrics from her store of seagoing knowledge.
So boggle me bowsprit, mate, just one word more, and I'll give ye a whack with the back of me paw.
She backed water with her paddle to slow the log down, for a creature had appeared on the bank. He was an enormously fat, scruffy weasel with a runny snout and the better part of that morning's breakfast evident on the filthy tunic he wore. He was hanging on to a thick vine rope which trailed upward and was lost among the trees above. Spitting into the stream, he eyed Dotty nastily and uttered one word. More! The hair maid smiled politely at him.
Beg pardon? What was that you said, old chap?
He thrust his chin out belligerently at her.
More! I said more! So then, are you going to give me a whack with the back of your paw? Just you try it, rabbit.
The hair maid sighed, rolling her eyes upward as if for help.
If you washed your face this morning, then you missed out cleaning your eyes, sir. I am not a rabbit. I'm a hare, you know. As for swiping chaps with paws, it didn't apply to you. It was merely a ditty I was singing.
The weasel spat into the stream again.
You said that if and I said one word more, you'd give me a whack with the back of your paw. So I said one word more. More!
Dotty eyed him disdainfully. Her mother had warned her about creatures who used aggressive language and spat a lot. There was only one way to treat such beasts, with disdain. Accordingly, she stared regally down her nose at him.
Disgusting habit, spitting. And let me tell you, my good vermin, this stream level won't rise a fraction, no matter how much you continue to spit in it. Good day!
As she sailed by him, the weasel roared out,
Boat ahoy!
She waggled her ears at him, a sign of contempt often used by well-bred hair maids.
Of course it's a boat, you benighted buffoon. What did you suppose it was, a tea trolley?
The weasel signaled to the opposite bank, where another, similarly fat and untidy weasel appeared. He, too, was hanging on to a vine rope and was in the habit of spitting into the stream. He leered at Dotty as she sailed by.
Think you're tough, don't you? We'll see.
Both weasels let go their ropes, and a log came crashing out of the trees above. It splashed sideways into the water, blocking off the stream behind Dotty's boat. The hair maid knew she was in trouble and paddled furiously to get away from the revolting pair. Unfortunately, she had not gone more than a dozen boat lengths when another log came hurtling downward into the stream. Now she was blocked in fore and aft. Dotty controlled her craft as the prow bucked slightly on the bow waves set up by the falling trunk. She watched in apprehension while two more weasels emerged from the bushes. These were females, even bigger, fatter and more repulsive than the two males who came shambling up to join them. Dotty sat primly on her vessel. She knew that reasoning with such blackguards was likely to be useless, but she decided to give it a try.
"Good morning to you, ladies. I trust I find you well, what?"
One of the females spat in the stream.
"Ooh, listen to her, will you? She called us ladies, la-dee-da."
Her male companion scratched his head with a grimy claw.
I ain't no lady, and she was gonna whack me with the back of her paw.
Immediately things got nasty.
The other female produced a rusty wood saw and began wading out toward Dottie.
Oh, did she now? Well, I'll leave me mark on her for that.
Dottie stood up, wielding her paddle warningly.
Stay away from me, Marm. I'm beautiful, but I'm dangerous.
Lunging forward, the weasel grabbed her victim's footpaw.
Ha! You won't be pretty no more when I'm done with yer. Whack!
The hair maid brought the paddle down hard between her opponent's ears. Making a horrendous din, the weasel flopped back to the bank.
Ow! 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 Murder! I'm killed! Me poor skull's splitted in 20 places! Yarg! There's blood everywhere! I'm killed! Murdered! Slayed, I tell yer! Yeek!
Dottie could see she had raised a bump on the weasel's head, but there was no sign of blood.
Oh, stop moaning, you great fat fraud. There's nothing wrong with you apart from a bump on the noggin. I wasn't about to let you come at me with that big rusty wood saw.
The other weasel, who was hauling his injured comrade out of the water, let her fall back in with a splash. He clapped both paws over his mouth.
Oh, oh, did you hear that? She called Ermie fat. She's an insulter as well as a murderer.
The other male sniffed and wiped a paw across his eyes, looking ready to burst into tears.
You had no need to hit Ermie like that, and you got no right to call her fat. We'll punish yer when you come ashore.
Dottie brandished her weapon.
Not while I've got this paddle, you won't. Now pull that log out the way and let me by.
The weasel stuck out his bottom lip and scuffed the soil with a footpaw.
Won't.
Dottie splashed the water with her paddle and glared fiercely.
Oh, yes, you will.
Won't.
The female Ermie set up a fresh wail.
Yah-ha-ha! I told yous we should have sneaked up just after dawn and killed her after the badger and otter runned away. Now look at me, dying away. Wah-ha-ha!
Brocktree and Ruff stepped out of the woodlands, both trying hard not to smile. The badger pointed a warning paw across at Ermie.
Stop that blubbering before I give you something to cry for.
She lapsed into instant silence. Ruff shook his head at her.
Good job you never tried to ambush Dottie after dawn. We were watching you from the trees.
Brocktree pointed to the log barrier blocking the way downstream.
Haul on your ropes and raise that thing.
He unsheathed his battle blade.
Now!
Dottie had never seen four overweight weasels move so fast. Puffing and blowing in between sobs of distress, they hauled the log back up, whining continuously.
Oh, spare us, sire. We never meant her no harm.
No, you never mean harm to any creature brave enough to stand up to you. I never liked bullies. Now hang on tight to those ropes and hold out your left foot paws. Be quick about it.
Wah, you ain't gonna chop 'em off, are you, sire? We won't never bully no more travelers. Don't hurt us.
Ruff knotted the free end of their rope tight around the foot paws of the nearest pair, then swam across to perform the same office for Ermie and her companion.
Bless your filthy arts. Course we won't hurt ye. Left? Left, the beast said. That's your right.
When they were securely tied, Brocktree barked out an order.
Let go of those ropes now!
As the four weasels released their hold, the logs started to fall back toward the stream, jerking the vermin off their footpaws and slowing suddenly as it was counterbalanced by their weight. With yelps of alarm, they were raised upside down with their left footpaws bound securely to the ropes. Equilibrium found all four dangling alongside the log in midstream, just above Dottie's head. The hair maid winced as Ermie's wailing rang out close to her ear.
Yah-ha-ha! Don't leave me here hanging upside down with a big lump on me, Ed! I beg yer! Wah-ha!
Placing her wet paddle blade over the lump, Dottie soothed the unhappy vermin.
Hush now, my dear. Crying won't make it better. Here, I'll flatten it for you. Hold still, please.
Dottie whacked the paddle forcefully with her paw and flattened the bump completely. She also stunned Ermie, much to every beast's relief. Brocktree and Ruff had climbed aboard, and now they sailed on downstream, with Dottie admonishing them.
"I'm surprised at you, Ruff, deserting me like that, what? But as for you, sir, it comes as no surprise, let me tell you. I was beset by villains once before, as I recall, while you hid behind a tree until I was overcome. This is the second time you've left me to it now. Bad form, sir, bad form. I thought you Brocktree types were made of sterner stuff. Seems I was wrong, though, what, what?"
Brocktree dangled his footpaws in the stream flow, nodding. "I can understand how you feel, miss, but we had our reasons. We didn't want to confront them until you learned a little object lesson, which you did wonderfully. What do you think, Ruff?" The big otter saluted Dottie with a swirl of his tail.
"I was proud of you, missy mate. You never showed any fear. You stood up to him. That's the only way to deal with bullies."
Inwardly, Dottie glowed happily at her friend's remarks, but she was still a bit peeved, and she let them know.
"Yes, all very nice, thank you, but that's not the point. What if those weasels had rushed me? I wouldn't have stood much blinkin' chance against four of them, not to mention that awful rusty saw. I shudder to think what they might have done to me if anything had gone wrong with your timing."
Ruff winked roguishly at his indignant young companion.
"Ha ha! You had no cause to worry. We were watching you every bit of the way. There was never any real danger. You see, I knows this stream, and those vermin, too. They're naught but fat old blusterers. I've seen 'em back off from a bad-tempered frog. But if and you didn't know that, and you were a bit faint-hearted, the looks and the size of those four nasty lumps might have scared you into surrendering to 'em. But you taught those baddies a lesson, Dottie."
Brocktree chuckled dryly. "I'll say you did, young'un. A born perilous hare you are." Dottie was about to make some frosty rebuke when Ruff caught sight of the sketch and message he had so painstakingly written out on the log.
"Boy, that ain't the way I drew it."
Dottie fluttered her sweetest smile at him.
"It was far too crude. I've altered it a teensy bit."
Suddenly it was the otter's turn for indignation.
"You cheeky little tail wag. Look at the great fat belly you've drawn on me. I look like a stuffed stoat."
Brocktree's booming laughter echoed off the banks.
"Ho, ho, ho, ho! Well done, miss! Ha, ha, ha! A stuffed stoat, eh?
Oh, come on, Ruff. Where's your sense of humor?"
The otter looked him straight in the eye.
"Same place as yours'll be when you see what she's done to your picture, my lord."
The badger put aside his paddle and leaned across to view Dottie's artwork. She covered both ears as he exploded.
"You foul little fur-covered grub-scoffer! I haven't got a wobbly, fat, drooping nose like that! How dare you, miss!"
For answer, Dottie leapt to her paws, waving her paddle about.
"Back, I say, back, droopy nose and fatty gut! You know that I'm a blisterin', perilous beast, and know no fear!"
Ruff went into a pretty fair imitation of the weasel Ermy.
"Ow, ow, ow, I beg your... Don't arm us, Miss Floppy Ears."
The situation was so funny that the three friends fell about laughing until tears streamed from their eyes. A deep, gruff voice hailed them from the south bank.
"Yer, I do likes to hear arpy creatures, particularly in the springtime. What be you larfin' about, Zer Ruffo?"
Wiping moisture from her eyes, Dottie saw the mole more clearly. He was a stout, dapper-looking creature, wearing a green smock embroidered with daisies and buttercups, and sporting a bright orange kingfisher feather in his tall, mushroom-shaped cap. Clutched in his paw was a ladle, almost as long as a traveling staff. He had the friendliest of smiles, exposing lots of milky white teeth. Ruff evidently knew the mole. He waved his tail at him as he steered the log to shore.
"Sink me, rudder. 'Tis Rog Long Ladle. How's your snout twitching, mate? It must be four seasons since I clapped eyes on you. Well, this is an happy day."
Bounding ashore, Ruff embraced Rog's stout form heartily. Still smiling, the mole protested.
Let oi go, ye girt lump, increasin' my smock."
The otter called his friends onto the bank.
"Brock, Dottie, come here, mates.
I want you to meet my pal Rog, the best cook on this or any other stream, and the smartest turned-out mole on or under the earth."
Rog doffed his hat gallantly, bowing his velvety head.
"Good day to ye, sir and miss. Nice to meet ye, I'm sure."
Dotty leapt lightly ashore and curtsied nicely.
Good day to ye, Sir Rog. Stand on my tunnel, but human handsome girt beast, her eye."
Rog threw up his big digging claws in surprise.
"Brr, you'm spakey mole speak very good, miss. Where did ye learn it?"
Dotty answered in the quaint mole dialect.
"My old mom's mole chum, Blossom Bun. She'm taughtin' it to oi when oi were a hinfant, bo'er I."
Ruff shrugged helplessly at Brocktree.
"Just listen to those two going at it. I could always understand mole speak, though I never learnt to speak it."
"Me neither," Brocktree said as they followed in the wake of the chattering hair maid and mole.
Blossom Bun, do ee say, miss? Sheem bees my hanty, twice removed on my grandmum's side. How sheem a doin'?
Brr! Old Blossom bees brisker than a bumblebee and lively as ee bucket of froggers, zur."
Rog Long Ladle's dwelling was a marvelous cavern beneath the roots of a great beech. Lord Brocktree gazed about wistfully. "This place puts me in mind of my old home, Brockhall. Very much so."
Don't suppose I'll ever see it again."
Ruff patted the badger's broad back.
"Same as me and Dotty. Don't be sad, mate. We're good friends and both with ye."
Amid the alcoves of thick, down-growing roots, Dotty sat herself in a comfortable old armchair. Moles kept scurrying by to introduce themselves to the hare who could speak their dialect.
"I be grand for club, miss, and this year's moy old dearie grandma Dumbrel. You'll stay and take vittles with us, and I hopes, miss."
Dotty shook all the outstretched paws as more came by.
"Thank ye, Sir Club. I'd be gertly pleased to, or I."
Ruff and Brocktree seated themselves on a thickly moss-grown ledge where they were inspected by some tiny young moles. The smallest of them had a voice like a bass foghorn.
"Good day to ye, zers. My name be's Trouble."
"I can see that. You look like Trouble."
Hur. My mum allus says that. What sort of mole bees you, zer? I bain't never seed one with a girt stoipy head like yourn."
"Oh, I'm called a badger mole, and Ruff's an otter mole."
"He must be eatin' girt bowlfuls of puddin' to grow big like ye are. How did he get so girt?"
Ruff winked at the badger and replied,
"Keepin' clean, my little mate, that's how. We get scrubbed 5 times every day, and that's why we growed big."
Trouble wrinkled his baby snout at the other small moles.
"Whirr! Reckons all stay lickle, then."
Rog appeared, dabbing at his brow with a dock leaf which he used to shoo the moles off with.
"Grr, be offen with thee, Trouble. Gurlo, Burkle, Plug, you'uns leave ye gentle beast to rest a while. Come and help oi in the kitchen if any wants vittles to be ready sooner. And be washing any paws first."
Left to themselves, the three travelers took their ease, Brocktree and Ruff stretching out on the mossy ledge. Dotty sprawled comfortably in the armchair, letting tempting aromas from the kitchen hover about her. Through half-closed eyes, she took in the homely cavern. Lanterns of varying hues hung everywhere. Shelves and cupboards were carved neatly into the rocks and heavy tree roots. The floors were strewn with woven rush mats, and 2 black and orange banded sexton beetles dozed close to the embers on the hearth. Household pets, used by the moles to keep the cavern free of crumbs and other morsels which the babes left about. Before Dottie's eyes finally closed, she sighed. What a pleasant place. A real home.
9. It was sometime in the late evening when Fleetscott collapsed. A combination of overwhelming fatigue, thirst, and hours of strong sunlight, together with the fact that the old hare had run without stopping for almost 2 days, brought him down. Head hanging, paws dragging, he tottered about on the open flatlands like a beast driven crazy. He did not realize he had fallen at first. Fleetscott lay on the rough ground, the tongue hanging dry from his mouth, footpaws still moving in a running action, kicking up small dust clouds. In his delirium, he squinted at a rock, imagining it was Lord Stonepaw gazing sternly at him.
"Sire, there ain't a hare nowheres to be found," he croaked feebly. "I tried. I did my best for you. But alas, Lord, the young hares are gone from the land."
Fleetscott's eyes glazed over and he fell back senseless. From a rocky outcrop, a crow had been watching the old hare, waiting. Now it flew forward, cautiously at first, using rocks as cover. On reaching the fallen hare, it pecked lightly at his ear. He did not stir. Emboldened by this, the crow swaggered and strutted around Fleetscott, weighing up its prey. At the very moment the crow decided to start pecking at the hare's eyes, a slingstone knocked the talons from under it. Squawking angrily, the hefty blackbird took awkwardly to the air and flapped off, sent on its way by another stone, narrowly missing its wingtip. The young squirrel, Bettle, and 5 companions hurried to Fleetscott's side and ministered to him.
"Just drip the water on his tongue, not too fast." "Poor fool, Juka said he'd not get far. Look at his paws." "Aye, they be torn badly. Hast any herbs in thy bag, Ruro?"
The squirrel Ruro emptied out the bag.
"Sanicle, dock leaves, and moss. Here, let me attend him."
Pouring water on the ingredients, she made compresses.
"He be lucky Juka sent us after him. Bettle, can thee make up a stretcher?"
Bettle set about removing his tunic. He slotted 2 spears down the sleeves, calling out to the youngest of the party,
"Grood, I'll need thy tunic. Give it here."
Reluctantly, Grood removed the garment. Bettle eyed him fiercely.
"Watch thy tongue, young'un, or thine ears will get boxed twice, once by me and once by Juka Sling."
Moonlight shafted pale through the pines. A small fire encased within a rock oven sent out a welcome ruddy glow. Fleetscott became aware of creatures hovering over him. Squirrels. One of them called out softly,
"He be right, Juka. He lives."
Juka the Sling's tough features hove into view.
"Most creatures of long seasons would be dead after putting themselves through such a trial."
Fleetscott's tongue moistened his lips, his voice, when it came, sounding cracked and hoarse.
"When I go, it'll be with a weapon in me paw fightin'. Till then, I'll just hang about and annoy you, friend."
Juka chuckled.
"What's that they say on yon mountain? Thou art a perilous creature. Rest now, long ears, drink some soup and sleep. We'll talk on the morrow."
Rest was the last thought on Fleetscott's mind. But no sooner had he drunk half a beaker of mushroom soup than the vessel slipped from his paws and he went into a deep slumber. Morning and noontide came and passed, and it was evening when Fleetscott wakened.
"How do thy paws feel? Sore, I'll wager."
The old hare struggled to a sitting position, allowing Ruro to change the dressings.
"Just bandage 'em tight, so I can run on 'em, marm."
Ruro shook her head at the defiant old hare.
"Nay, thou art going nowhere. Juka Sling would have words with thee. Rest and eat something."
Fleetscott tried to get up onto his paws, but collapsed, wincing from the pain.
"Where is Juka?"
Bettle brought food and placed it before the hare.
"She'll be back by dark a night. You must wait. Juka will have news of thy mountain, what has taken place there. Come, be not foolish. You must eat to live."
Fleetscott picked up a potato and hazelnut pasty.
"So be it, old lad. But 'tis you who are foolish, inviting a hare to eat. Is that a carrot flan I see?"
When he had satisfied his hunger and thirst, Fleetscut lay back and fell into a doze. Bettle sat wide-eyed.
"'Struth! Did you ever see a creature eat like that in all thy born days?'
Ruro removed the empty platters, shaking her head.
"'And still he be skinny as a willow withe. Would that I could pack away victuals like that and stay lean as he!'
Midnight had long gone when Juka the Sling arrived back at the pines. She sat panting and sipping at a flask of elderberry wine.
"'Our hare sleeps yet, eh?'
Ruro fed the fire with a dead pine log.
"'He wakened earlier, ate like a mad beast, and fell asleep again. Shall I wake him?'
The squirrel leader put aside her wine.
"'Nay, let him sleep on. There's naught but bad news to hear when he wakens.' "'The mountain of Salamandastron has fallen, then?'
Juka warmed her paws by the fire. A chill breeze was blowing in from the seas.
"'Aye, 'tis conquered by the blue ones. I could not get too near, but I saw from a distance some vermin scaling the slopes. They carried large new banners to put up there. 'Tis a sad day for these western coasts, Ruro.'
Bettle crouched nearby, preparing Juka's meal.
"'Mayhap we should have helped the old one, Juka.' "'Thou art a fool if that's what thee think, Bettle. We'd be naught but slain carcasses rolling in the tide shallows now, had we gone up against such a force. Yon Badger Lord and his hares were brave, mad beasts. They did what they had to, but 'twas a foregone conclusion.'
Spots of rain that had found their way through the pine canopy roused Fleetscut in the dawn hour. Juka was awake also, sitting watching him, cloaked in a blanket. Turning her back on the old hare, she raked ash from the fire embers and brought it to crackling life by feeding broken pine branches into the rock oven. Fleetscut's voice hit her back like a whip.
"'Tell me, what has happened to my mountain? Speak!'
Juka did not turn, but she gave him his answer. By the time the entire squirrel camp was up and about, Fleetscut had hauled himself upright and stood supporting himself against a pine trunk, a plate of food lying at his footpaw, untouched. Juka still sat watching him.
"'There was naught any beast could have done, Fleetscut. Come now, eat. I hear tell that thou art a beast with great appetite.'
A kick from the hare's footpaw sent the plate flying. His eyes were like stone, his voice dripping contempt.
"'I don't eat with cowards!'
Juka sprang up, a loaded sling automatically in her paw.
"'No beast calls Juka the Sling a coward!'
The old hare tore his tunic open, exposing his scrawny chest.
"'Then kill me, Juka! Go on, kill me! One old hare shouldn't be too difficult for a warrior like you, what?' Slay me, and see how long you and your band can hide out in this pine grove until Ungat Trun's blue hordes find you all. Then you'll wish you'd helped to fight against him and save Salamandastron. Thrack!
Juka's slingstone clipped off a branch a hair's breadth from Fleetscut's head and whirred off among the trees. The squirrel stood before him, her wild eyes blazing.
Any other beast would have been dead by now, hare. But I'll prove to thee that me and mine aren't cowards. We'll go with thee on thy search, aye, and carry ye if needs be. I'll help ye build an army, hares or any creature crazy enough to go against the hordes on yonder mountain. Then we'll fight them, us for the taking of weapons, which we value so highly, and thou for thy vengeance on the foes who slew thy brothers. I, Juka the Sling, do not do this out of comradeship for ye. War is a business. I do it for profit, for all the weapons my tribe may plunder if victory is ours.
Hare and squirrel stood face to face, their wrathful eyes searing one another. Fleetscut curled his lip scornfully.
Do it for whatever reason you like, Brushtail, but do it!
Juka was trembling all over with rage.
Ho ho! I'll do it. Never fret about that, Long Ears,
she growled.
Once Juka the Sling gives her word, thou canst stake thy life on it.
Fleetscut turned his back on the squirrel and began hobbling off, calling back over his shoulder.
Well, you won't get it done standing round making bloomin' speeches all day.
Actions speak louder than words, don't you know?
In total, Juka's tribe numbered 50 able-bodied creatures and a dozen who were either too young or too old to serve her purpose. She left 8 of the warriors with these 12, and the other 43, counting herself, were ready to march within the hour, each of them armed and provisioned. Ruro caught up with Fleetscut, who was limping ahead near the pine grove's edge.
Hold up, friend. My tribe will be with thee shortly. Here, take these. 'Twill make the going easier.
Fleetscut allowed her to loop a small bag over his shoulder. Then he took the short, thick-handled spear and hefted it. The weapon had a sharp, double-edged blade, shaped like a gray willow leaf, with a cross-tree where it joined the shaft.
Strange spear, what? Wouldn't be very accurate to throw. Rations in this bag, I suppose, though by the feel of it, there's not more than a couple of days' supply.
Ruro showed him her spear, which was the same type as his.
Useful things, these. Juka designed them for close combat, not for throwing. See, the blade is as good as a sword. The cross-tree can ward off blade thrusts, and the thick shaft makes a fine, long club. Our food is good for long treks. 'Tis made of dried fruit and berries stuffed into a farl of oat and rye bread, which has been well soaked in honey. A creature can march all day on just a few mouthfuls, providing there's water to drink. Here come the others now. Lean down on thy spear, Fleetscut. Grasp the cross hilt, but keep thy paw clear of the blade. Makes a good walking stick, eh?
The old hare was forced to agree. The going was much easier with the spear to aid him. Juka strode by them in high, bad humor, remarking to Ruro as she passed,
Tell me if the ancient one falls behind. We can carry him trussed to a long pike like a carcass.
Fleetscut's voice rang out after her.
You've got a good fast stride there, Marm. Stap me, but you have. Must be with having to retreat from all your foes, what?
Juka kept marching, but her ears and tail shot up rigid with anger at the insult. Ruro shook her head sadly.
Do not provoke Juka Sling over much, my friend. She has never been bested in a fight. No matter how much thou thinkest she hath wronged thee, remember, she was only doing what was best for her tribe. I would have done the same in her place.
Fleetscut had come to like Ruro a lot, so he did not argue with her, but changed the subject.
I wonder where she's taken us.
His friend pointed to the northeast.
To the Rockwood. We should be there by nightfall, methinks. Juka will want words with Udara Groundslay.
And who in the name of seasons is Udara Groundslay?
Ruro quickened her pace as the other squirrels went by.
Enough talk now, friend. We're starting to lag behind. Save thy breath for traveling, or mayhap Juka will carry out her threat and have you slung on a pike.
Fleetscut stumped along faster on his makeshift stick.
Ah! If she ever tries it, she'll find out what the term perilous hare really means.
Juka marched them ruthlessly all through that day, taking it out on Fleetscut for his ill-chosen remarks to her. Out on the flatlands, there was no water. The sun beat down without respite, and not a breeze stirred the brownish scrub grass, which would be withered before the advent of summer. Grasshoppers chirruped dryly. Larks could be heard high overhead. Like the squirrels, the old hare sucked on a flat pebble to retain the moisture in his mouth. His paw ached abominably from holding and leaning upon the metal cross-tree of the spear, even though he had tried to cushion it with clumps of grass. Juka remained silent and angry, but her tribe sang a marching song to keep up their spirits. The old hare had never heard the tune before, so he too kept quiet as they tramped wearily across the scorched acres of open land, though like any old soldier, he kept pace with the beat.
Down goes the paw, and up rises dust. Keep thy courage, hold thy trust. Come to our journey's end we must, marching the high road together. Tramp, tramp, tramp. Can we make camp? Not whilst there's light, not till tonight. 1, 2, 1, 2, beneath a sky of blue. Sing out, comrades, tramp, tramp, tramp. On goes the trail forevermore, weary of limb and sore of paw. Keep on moving, that's our law, marching the high road together. Tramp, tramp, tramp. Can we make camp? I'll tell you when, don't stop till then.
1212, daylight hours growing few. Sing out, comrades, tramp, tramp, tramp.
In the late afternoon, Fleet's Cut stumbled and fell. Before any beast had noticed, Ruro heaved him up, set him back on his stick, and supported his other side. The old hare gritted his teeth as he stumbled onward at the rear of the tribe.
How far is it now, Ruro?
She indicated with a nod of her head.
Yonder, see? There's the rockwood. We made good time. Methinks we'll be there before evening. Can you carry on, friend? 'Twould not hurt to take a rest, now that Rockwood be in sight.
Fleet's Cut wiped dust from his eyes with a free paw.
If a squirrel can do it, I'm sure a salamander strawn hare can. I'll blinkin' well make it, Miguel. Just you watch.
Rockwood turned out to be a huge stone outcrop, dotted with gnarled trees and stunted bush. Bettle had been sent ahead to scout it out, and he came dog-trotting back to report as the tribe arrived at its base.
I spotted Udara, but he vanished mid the shrubbery. Good news, though, the little lake hasn't dried up. Plenty of water there.
Juka held up a paw for order as a ragged cheer went up.
Hearken, all of ye! We be on the domain of Udara Groundslay. Give no offense. Mind thy manners. That goes for thee, too, Long Ears. Wait you all here till I return.
She scrambled up into the rocks and was lost to sight amid the foliage. Fleet's Cut sat down with the tribe, glad of the rest, but still very curious.
So then, Ruro, who is this Udara Groundslay? Tell me.
The squirrel lay back, shading both eyes with her tail.
You'll find out soon enough, friend.
Juka returned after a short while.
Udara will see us after sundown. You may drink of his water, but not swim in it, nor wash. I will deal with any beast that does. There be small apples and pears on some of the trees. Take only the high ones. Leave those in the lower branches. You will do as I say, understand?
A weary rumble of assent came from the squirrels. As they moved off into the rocks, Grood could be heard muttering under his breath. Juka caught the youngster by his ear and tweaked it, none too gently.
I heard that mouthful you came out with, wretch. See this strip of bark? I'll gag you with it if I hear one more word from you while we're guests upon Rockwood.
Fleet's Cut patted his stomach. It made a swilling noise from all the cool, sweet water he had drunk from the little shaded pool. He gnawed upon a pear, which felt as hard as the rocks surrounding him, and lay still while Ruro changed his dressings. The good squirrel soaked dock leaves, sanicle, and rock moss in water and pounded them into a soothing poultice before applying them to the old hare's footpaws. Fleet's Cut sighed.
Ah, my thanks, friend. You know, my paws are starting to feel wonderful, what? I feel like a young leveret again.
Ruro put the final touches to her dressings.
Then rest thee and try not to go dashing about. 'Twould ruin all my work. Lay up in the shade here where 'tis cool.
Fleet's Cut did as she instructed. He took a few bites from the heavy, honey-soaked farl of trekking bread, a couple more swigs of water to counteract the sticky sweetness, and lay back. All around him, others were doing likewise. Some distance away, he glimpsed Juka, sitting alone and waiting for evening shades to fall. That would be when their mysterious host might put in an appearance. Fleet's Cut dozed off, wondering just what sort of creature Udara Groundslay would turn out to be. 10. Ungat Trun sat closeted in his humid stateroom while his officers led his blue hordes against Salamandastron. He watched the spiders scuttling across their silky gossamer webs, pursuing flies, trapping them, and finally sucking the life from their victims' bodies. Spiders were savage, independent, and deadly. Ungat liked them. He had learned many lessons by lying back in his cabin and watching them. One thing, however, was troubling his mind. The striped dog, not the old one who ruled the mountain, but he who bestrode his dreams, big, strong, and forbidding, with his face always wreathed in a blur of mist. The wildcat would have given much to see the features of his foe, for foe he surely was, and coming closer each day.
Now, when Ungat's eyes closed, he saw the phantom badger looming larger, surrounded by an ever-growing presence. The signs were there. This striped dog was gathering an army about him. Ungat Trun had never been a superstitious creature, until he first heard of the mountain called Salamandastron. Prior to that, he had been a conqueror, a warrior, with little regard for omens and dreams. Now he found himself listening to the riddles of a crippled fox, simply because, being neither wizard nor magician, he could not construe what went on in the land of visions. It angered him. He closed his eyes tightly and spoke aloud, trying his utmost to concentrate his thoughts on the big striped dog who haunted the corridors of his mind.
"Come, show your face to me. Come to my mountain and meet with your fate. I am Ungat Trun, the fearsome beast. You will die by my paw the day you look upon my face."
Outside on the afterdeck, Grottle and the Grand Fregoral were leaning on the stern rail, watching Salamandastron fall to the blue hordes, who broke upon it like the never-ending waves of the sea. Both creatures heard the Wildcat's raised voice from the cabin beneath. They could not hear his exact words, so, fearing that they might be absent when he was calling for them, Grottle and Fregoral hastened down to the stateroom door. The magician fox tapped respectfully and called,
"Mightiness? Do you wish us to attend you?"
Ungat Trun prowled sinuously out onto the deck, his plain war armor accentuating the strength and size of a fully grown male wildcat. His slitted eyes flicked shoreward before turning to the pair.
"How goes the conquest of my mountain?"
Gran Fregoral replied in her usual monotone. "You will be enthroned within it by nightfall, O Shaker of the Earth. Already they are battering down its gates." The wildcat strode to the rail, both creatures following in his wake.
"Bring a boat. We will go ashore."
One of the horde's most respected captains, a female rat named Meyerfleck, stood awaiting them on the tide line. With her were two newcomers, big, sturdy young rats, one carrying bow and arrows, the other with a cutlass thrust in his belt. Ungat silently sized them up, sea rats both. He stood to one side, allowing Meyerfleck and his Fregoral to do the speaking. Meyerfleck saluted with her spear.
"These are two rats from the seas. They heard of the master's fame and wish to join his blue hordes."
Fregoral nodded and turned to address the pair.
"Know ye that you can serve no other master than Ungat Trun, son of King Mortspear. Swear this under pain of death."
The rats looked at one another, and then the one with the cutlass bowed his head slightly, answering for them both.
"I'm Ripfang, and this is my brother, Dumai. We swear we will serve Ungat Trun."
Fregoral held a small, whispered conference with the wildcat before turning her attention back to the brothers.
"His mightiness looks upon you both with favor. Beasts who are skilled with arms and useful in battle are ever welcome to the blue hordes. Put aside your weapons and come."
Ripfang and Dumai carried out the orders issued by Grottle. First, they immersed themselves completely from ears to tails in a rock pool. Then, climbing out, they both knelt in front of him. Grottle bade them close their eyes as he shook the contents of a large bag containing dark blue powder over them. Meanwhile, Fregoral intoned the initiation words.
"Blue is the sea, blue is the sky, mightiest under the sun. Blue are you, the same as I, servants of Ungat Trun. Let him see what you are worth. Make lesser creatures see why the chosen ones can shake the earth, whilst the foes of their master die."
Turning on his heel, the wildcat headed for the mountain with Fregoral in his wake. Grottle stayed momentarily to acquaint the new recruits with their duties.
"Rub the powder into your fur, all over, and stay away from water until the sun has risen 3 times. By then the blue color will be permanent, and you can report to Captain Meyerfleck and join her horde section."
The din of battle rang out from the mountain. Both rats opened their eyes, wiping away blue powder residue from their eyelids, as they watched the three retreating figures. The one called Dumai retrieved his bow and arrows, rubbing the powder into his fur as he did so.
Well, it looks like we're blue horde beasts now, eh, brother?
Rip Fang suited his name. Some quirk of nature had left him with one great curved tooth growing out of the center of his top jaw, so that now his smile appeared as a ghastly grimace.
Aye, for as long as we gain more plunder and victuals than we did at piratin'.
Lord Stonepaw knew defeat was inevitable. Against frighteningly overwhelming odds, his hares had put up a gallant battle, but to no avail. Stiffener Medic had fought his way up to the high-level chambers where the Badger Lord and his remaining warriors had retreated. Black, oily smoke swirled around them as it rose from the lower mountain passages and chambers. Ignoring a deep slash in his paw, the fighting hare threw a salute to Stonepaw.
"We're cut off from the rest, sir. Bungworthy's command, we're cut to pieces trying to hold the main gate. Those vermin burned and battered it down. Old Bungworthy was standing up to his scut in slain blue ones, yelling eulalias and hacking at wave after wave of the scum, but they kept on coming. He went down just as I made it to the main stairs. Season's rest is brave memory."
Stonepaw's shattered lance fell to the floor.
"Did you see any of Salier's command on the second level?"
Stiffener wiped tears from his eyes.
"They was taken, Lord, surrounded and beaten. 'Twas full of foe beasts, packed tight. Saliers and the rest didn't even get a chance to fight. I got a smack o'er the ears and fell down stunned. One of 'em thought he'd stuck me with a blade, but I only got cut on me paw and side. They dashed off then, carrying torches to search the chambers for more prisoners. That's when I escaped and made it up here, sire. We'd best do something quick afore they come."
Ever gallant, the hare called Troby drew his blade.
"We'll hold him at the stairhead. Maybe we won't last long, but we'll take a tidy few of the villains with us. Who's with me? Eulalia!"
Stonepaw plucked the blade from Troby's grasp.
"No, listen to me. I know you're all perilous beasts, but if we're dead, then Salamandastron's completely lost. There are secret passages that lead down to the cellar caves. We'd never be found down there. At least we'd be alive until help arrives in one form or another. Come on!"
18 hares, the pitiful remainder of the mountain's old guard, were left to follow Lord Stonepaw. They filed after him, with his final words ringing in their ears.
"At least where there's life, there's hope, my friends."
Evening skies rimmed the western horizon with fiery scarlet as the sun dipped to the wine-dark seas, and still no birds were heard or seen. Warm from the day's heat, the sand was crowded with fresh blue horde beasts, none of whom had seen action that day. Ungat Trun had the Badger Lord's great chair brought out from the dining hall onto the beach, where he sat watching black smoke wreathe from the rock-carved windows while his officers made their reports. The first, Captain Frawl, a somber-looking stoat, bowed his head.
"Losses in the first wave amounted to..."
"Silence!"
Grottle interrupted in a squeaky shout.
"His Mightiness does not want to know about losses, fool! Report the victory, you great oaf!"
"Our victory was complete, O Great One."
The Grand Fregoral took her place at Ungat Trun's right paw.
"What other outcome could there be for Ungat Trun, son of King Mortspear? Captain Swinch, you were in the second wave. How many foe beasts do you report slain?"
Ungat held up a paw, halting Swinch. The Wildcat's other paw circled the Fregoral's neck in what appeared a friendly embrace. However, it was anything but friendly, as Ungat tightened his grip into a stranglehold. Pulling the Fregoral close, he growled low and harsh into her ear.
"I am Ungat Trun. I carve my own path. I conquer for myself. Call me Son of Mortspear again, and I'll see to it that you die slowly over a fire. Erase Mortspear's name from my list of titles. I never want to hear it again."
He released the ferret, and she staggered back, holding her throat. Ungat signaled Captain Swinch to continue.
70, 80, 90, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800, 900, 1000, 1012 of the lesser orders lie dead, mighty one. Their unworthy carcasses will be fed to the waters of the seas at ebb tide.
Grottle did some hasty figuring before pursuing the matter.
And how many were taken captive?
Captain Frawl answered.
My hornbeasts have 70 captives awaiting your judgment, mightiness.
The stunted fox cocked his head on one side, pacing a circle around the stowed officer.
72 dead and 60 captured. I make that 132 in all, Captain. Surely there were more hares defending the mountain than that.
Frawl swallowed and stood to attention, looking straight ahead.
Sire, I do not know the exact number we fought against. I can only report on the ones we have, dead or alive, sire.
Ungat Trun stepped down from his great chair then, right onto the fox's bushy tail. Grottle winced, but stayed still, fearing to move. Like a knife, the wildcat's voice pierced his back.
Our scouts, who watched the mountain, reported at least 150 of those old hares. Then there's another matter, my malformed magician.
Where's the Badger Lord Stonepaw?
Grottle jumped as Ungat shouted the last words, though he knew better than to try to give an answer. Ungat kicked him, sending him sprawling as his master ranted.
Old Stonepaw, the striped dog, must still be alive inside that mountain, with a faithful few around him. Did no beast have the sense to think of that? I want that badger here, flat on his muzzle in front of me, and the last of his hares alive or dead. Find him, Grottle. Take some horde beasts with you. Search every crack or hiding place inside that mountain, but find him. Now get out of my sight!
The fox signaled to Captain Swinch to bring his soldiers and scrambled off through Salamandastron's broken gates. Stonepaw and his hares encountered no beast on their journey down to the cellars. Without even torches, they felt their way through dark, unused corridors and silent, forgotten chambers, down, down to the network of caverns beneath Salamandastron. Holding tight to the ancient Bramwell, Blench, the cook, waved her ladle in the Stygian blackness so that she would not bump into any unseen rocks. Her voice echoed spectrally.
Are you sure you know where we're going, Lord?
The badger's weighty paw descended lightly on her shoulder.
Hush, Marm. Sound carries down here. Don't fret. I know this place like the back of my paw. I've been Lord of Salamandastron more seasons than I care to recall. Longer than any other badger.
Stay to your left now. Keep the rocks close to your backs, every beast.
There was a slight splash, followed by a muffled groan. Stonepaw's voice sounded out a whisper of reprimand.
Left, I said, Blench. The paw you wear that shell bracelet on. Keep close now. Not far to go.
Blench heard her ladle clicking on rock both sides of her, and guessed that they were passing through a narrow tunnel. Wisely, she ducked her head.
Wait here, all of you. I'll be back in a moment.
The hares obeyed their lord's command, speculating in low voices as they huddled together in the dark.
Where's he gone? We should jolly well hurry up.
What's that flip-flopping sound up ahead, Troby?
Don't ask me. I'm as much in the dark as any beast.
As much in the dark. Hee-hee, that's a good'un.
Keep your blinking voice down, Bramwell. You sound like a frog in a barrel. I say, what's that?
Sparks flew up ahead, and there was a chinking sound of steel striking flint. In an instant, the area was flooded with light and waving shadows. Lord Stonepaw loomed up, a blazing torch creating a red-gold aura around him.
This way, friends. Follow me.
Gratefully, they shuffled along in the badger's wake until he halted, holding the torch up against what appeared to be a solid rock face.
Through here. 'Twas a bit of a squeeze for me, but you hares shouldn't find it too difficult.
There was a fissure in the rock wall, barely detectable. Stiffener looked at it incredulously.
You got through there, my lord? 'Tain't naught but a sort of sideways crack.
Emerging one by one from the narrow gap, the hares greeted the sight that met their eyes with gasps of surprise. They were in a medium-sized cavern with a pool at its center, which threw off a pale, luminescent green aura.
Water, dripping from white limestone stalactites, plopped gently into the pool, rippling it constantly and causing a shimmering effect in the light. Smooth, worn stone ledges bordered the cave walls, with knobbly stalagmites looking as if they had popped up from the floor. Stonepaw busied himself filling four big lanterns from a barrel of vegetable oil near the entrance. He lit them with his torch.
Here, place these about midway on the ledges.
When this was done, the added light had quite a cheering effect. The Badger Lord called them all to sit in a semicircle around him.
First, a few words for our dear comrades who are slain or captured by the foe beast. Bramwell, would you say it?
Faint, eerie echoes rebounded from the walls as the ancient hare intoned in a husky whisper to the bowed heads before him.
When sunlight tinges the dawn of the day, remember those brave ones now gone. We who recall them to mind, let us say, they were perilous beasts, every one. For those who live, but are not free, may we see their dear faces again. Mother Fortune grant them sweet liberty, and cause slaves not to suffer in pain.
A moment's silence followed, the only sound the measured cadence of droplets hitting the pool surface. Lord Stonepaw coughed gruffly and wiped his eyes, blinking as he surveyed the pitiful remnants of 150 loyal hares.
Right, Council of War. First, we've no food down here, but as you see, there's lots of cold, clear water. Now let's take a vote by show of paws. What do we do next? Shall we sit here and wait to be rescued, or do we search for a way out to freedom?
Every paw was raised for finding a way out of Salamandastron. The Badger Lord nodded approvingly.
Well, at least there'll be no arguments. Down to business, then. What weapons have we, Stiffener?
The boxing hare had his estimate ready.
4 light rapiers, bows and arrows, 8, full quivers, 2. No more than half a dozen javelins, but every beast carries a sling, and there ain't a shortage of stones hereabouts. Oh, 8 daggers and Blench's ladle. That's the lot, sir.
End of side 2. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.